Ja, eine gute Woche. It's we would talk about porn this week, which is what I want to do. It's in line with a lot of what we've been discussing lately. And I feel like it's really the call of the hour to porn is puts into part in particular puts gives us perspective on everything going on these days. So I'll start by saying the following. The Brisker Rav, someone once said to the Brisker Rav, I don't know exactly when, what exactly, with reference to what, but this person said to the Brisker Rav that the irreligious in America or in Chutz La'aretz, they're less, we'll call it, agendified. You know, they aren't agenda, they're just doing their thing. There aren't agendas. And therefore, just call it parv. In a vacuum, whatever it is, if they would be shown the type of nisim that occur in Eretz Yisrael, they would easily, recognize the truth and be drawn back, etc. And the Brisker Rav said that no, it's not true. He said because it's not just an issue of yes agendas, no agendas. He said in order to see nisim, you have to have trained eyes, you have to have the background, you have to have the infrastructure. In order to be able to know what you're seeing. And without that, you will continue to just see things, maybe be amazed, maybe not be amazed, maybe see it in a natural kind of way, and move on. So I want to make it, to apply this to our times, but in a two-sided kind of way, meaning that's on the one hand. On the other hand, bring another incident that brings out the other side of the coin. There was an incident where Rabbi Cheskel Levenstein, the Mashgiach of Panovich, he was one time in a taxi where the driver told him, a secular Jew, told him that he and a friend of his back in the day, they had gone off together to some escapade in, I don't know, Africa, somewhere out there, where he said they were attacked by a boa constrictor. They were attacked by a boa constrictor. And the boa constrictor attacked his friend and started, wrapped himself around this other fellow and started squeezing him to death. That's how boa constrictors do. It's not venomous, but they just squeeze life out of whatever it is they attack. And he said that his friends, and both of them were totally secular, but his friend then cried out, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, and said some tefillah to Hashem or something. And he said, like, inexplicably, the boa constrictor just kind of unwrapped itself and slithered off, and his friend was saved. His friend was spared. So he told him, Chatzka Levenstein, that his friend went back home and he ended up becoming religious as a result. I imagine that there's more to the story, but that was, make an unknown story short. So then Reb Chatzka looked at this fellow and said to him, okay, what about you? So the man answered, well, the snake didn't attack me. So what's my point? My point is that on the one hand, you very much see the point that the Brisker have made. But on the other hand, you also see that when things reach a certain level, even a person without background can be. Sees something that completely changes his world perspective. Like the person who was in the grips of the boa constrictor. I don't know if this person had background, didn't. But this is obviously applicable to things that we're seeing in our times now, also, where we see that Klal Yisrael is growing, Klal Yisrael is rising. And we're seeing now with the people who are coming back from the tunnels of the Hamas, and they're bringing with them treasures of emunah that they experienced in a very powerful way. Some of these are people who had some prior background, who perhaps had enough background to, with the intensity of what they experienced, to really take it to the next level. But some were people who didn't. Some were people who didn't. And yet, they also were turned on which is really just bringing out the point that even without the background, it can reach levels where the experience is so intense that it actually makes its way home.
They say there's no atheist in a foxhole.
Atheist in a foxhole.
So
Okay,
once you're in that foxhole.
that's right. That's right. That would basically be the point. Now, to a certain extent, as we're seeing these things happening, so we have to tell ourselves we're the people with the background. We're the people with the background. And all the events that have been happening, if we're talking about the last year and a half in general, and if we expand it even more than that to say the last 5 years, right, since with the with, since Corona hit, we see Hashem, if we'll put it this way, playing a number on his world. Yeah, Hashem is doing something with his world. He's moving things. He's, if we'll put it into these terms, he's reclaiming his world. He's asserting himself as the Baal HaBayis. He's moving the world closer to him. More and more, from all kinds of different angles, the idea of Olam kemenhagei noheg, the world runs its natural course, is becoming more and more something that's like shaykh to the past. We've been seeing less and less Olam kemenhagei noheg over these last few years. And the one common denominator of it all is that Hashem is coming out from behind the scenes a bit more and a bit more and a bit more and in different ways. And mamish, this last year, we've mamish been seeing how the line between a hidden nace and an open nace is starting to get very faded, very unclear. Where do you draw the line? At which point did it actually move over from being a hidden nace to an open nace? We've definitely seen things, or at least in the collective way, that you can't even describe as hidden nisim. But yet, that coding of Derech HaTeva is arguably there. It's getting stretched thinner and thinner and thinner. But if you want to see it, you can still see it. And people are missing, if we look at, and this is an amazing thing, it really is an amazing thing to be experiencing the processes that are going on now. But if you look at Klal Yisrael as a whole, if in earlier times, when I'm going to say earlier times, I mean, say, 6, 7 years ago, you wonder, like, what is Hashem expecting in terms of, if we think about Mashiach coming, if we think about the Geula, if we think about Hashem's full revelation. And in a way, you hear that Hashem is waiting for Klal Yisrael to come back to him. You think, like, what is it? Look how far so many people are. Like, what is Hashem picturing? The Chilonim are suddenly going to turn around. And you know what? Over the last year and a half, we've been seeing that. Let's not figure things out for Hashem. If Hashem wants to start a process of pulling even very distant people back to him, he can do it. And these year, this the events of this year and a half were very, very. You can fill in the blank in many different ways, but whatever it is, the adjective is very, right? And if you were to look at an X-ray to the inside of Klal Yisrael, right, to the under the surface, seeing it on the outside also, but the emunah level of Klal Yisrael as a whole has definitely gone up. In other words, it's been a very painful year and a half. It's been a year and a half of a confusing mixes of Hester Panim and Haoras Panim, as we've discussed many times, of uncanny protection and uncanny disaster, all outside the realms of Derech HaTeva. And we're not professing to claim to explain Darkei Shamayim, but the fact is that we are seeing Klal Yisrael, if we're talking on a broad level, is moving up, is coming closer. Hashem is moving his people toward him, moving his world toward him, everything going on in the world now is just so unpredictable, and in particular, moving his land toward him, moving his people toward him, reclaiming his land, his people, reasserting himself as the Balabais. Now, again, now it's going to boil down to a question of who's going to be attuned to it, who's going to be joining the bandwagon, because as we said, you could continue to just operate on a day-to-day basis of cause and effect and of, being all obsessed with the mechdalim, how do you say that in English, all the failures of this body and that body and who and what and how and the politics and all that. You can be busy with that. It's getting harder and harder, but you can hold on to that. But in a general way, even the people who are far are, there's a movement in that direction of seeing Hashem and moving toward it. And this obviously is a major reflection of what the essence of Purim is. This is the essence of Purim. That's why it's particularly appropriate now to be focusing on this. What was the story of Purim? The story of Purim, everybody knows it's famous, but let's look at it a little bit closer. The story of Purim was a story of a nes that took place within the Hester. The story of Purim was a story of over 9 years. Different events seemingly have no connection. Each one in itself could have just been an interesting headline. Achashverosh's Shalom Bayis problems. They really were a mismatch. And then Haman making his way to the top of the political scene. But just before that, there was a strange twist in the appointment of the queen. These are all different headlines.
9 years. This is the first time I thought it all happened like very fast because you just read.
Well,
Like...
we read it in 40 minutes, so it looks like the whole story happened over 40 minutes. But
years.
Yeah, well, let's look at the first pasuk in the Megillah. Is Mishnah Shalosh Lamalchai, right? That's the third year of his reign. Toward the end of the Megillah, we already hear the pasukim saying, I'm trying to find the precise pasuk, but Ubishnas, right? That is, if I remember correctly, that is in the pasuk of. Yeah. Sorry. All right, I'm not going to find it now, but yeah, somewhere toward the end when it's actually where everything is already playing out, it says that this was Bishnah 12 HaMelech in the 12th year of Achashverosh's rule, which, on the contrary, exactly what Mordechai and Esther were trying to do in compiling the Megillah was to bring it all together to you in one shot, that you're seeing it minute after minute, and then, oh wow, look what an amazing story. But back in the day, one thing happened. A year later, something else happened. A year later, something else happened. Each one was an interesting headline at the time, with other headlines in between that were unconnected. And were you going to see the connection, or were you not going to see the connection? Okay, I'll stop looking for it.
Yeah.
But
We'll hear it when we get there.
yeah, you'll hear it. That's right. That's right. So without Mordechai and Esther coming and putting it all together for us, there was an unbelievably lucky turn all the way at the end. That everybody would be amazed at that. That's great. But Mordechai and Esther want you to notice, not Shiknesses when they agreed to actually put it into the Kislev HaKodesh, no, they want you to see a whole chain of Hashem busy manipulating for 9 long years, where it seems that what goes from the Jews just being another minority in this massive Persian Empire, when nobody could dream how, yeah, you're talking about a tiny minority among 127 provinces, different nationalities. And Ahasuerus is all the way at the top, mighty Persian Empire. And there are the intrigues inside the palace. And who would ever say that that has any connection to the Jewish people? But Chazal tell us, and this is on the contrary, this is where we see it in the story of Purim, more than in all the great days of the open miracles going on in the time of the Bais Rishon. Why? Because in the time of the Bais Rishon, Klal Yisrael were in Eretz Yisrael. It was all contained. Hashem was busy with them in Eretz Yisrael. The rest of the world had nothing to do with it. The immensity of the story of the Megillah was that now the Jews suddenly were spread out all around the world. And now you see Hashem taking his conduct of the Jewish people to a much more macro level. All the ins and outs of everything going on in the world around are all revolving around this tiny people. If you want a Purim Dikka Mashal for this, you're probably familiar with the with Where's Waldo? You know, it's a big book with many, each page has this very, very, very detailed scene from some period in history, some place. All kinds of interesting things going on, and probably hundreds of figures on each page. And it's always about finding this one little guy in the middle, Waldo, right? So, if you just open this book and you start flipping through it and you don't know what the idea of the book is. So, yes, if you were to be asked, what's the theme of this book? Well, one page is depicting a scene in Africa, and another page is depicting a scene from the USA, another page is depicting a scene from the Middle Ages, and that's what it's about. And if I were to point to that one little guy in the middle and tell you, it's all about him. Now, come on. This guy's a very incidental piece in the picture. But no, the truth is that that whole wild scene with all the things going on is only for the purpose of having Waldo somewhere in the middle and you have to find him. And this is what Hashem was showing. This was the immensity of what happened after the Jews went to Golis. Where Hashem is illustrating that, and this is Rabbi Victor Miller would read this into the pasuk that says, "Hu Hashem Elokeinu b'chol ha'aretz mishpato." He is Hashem Elokeinu, meaning kiviyochol, the creator of the universe. What is his title, if you will? If you were to ask him, now what does it say on his card? What's his title? The creator of the entire universe, of the Milky Way. Earth is a tiny little piece. If you ask him what his title is, I am the God of the Jewish people, that tiny little people. Now, B'chol Ha'aretz Mishpatav, he's busy conducting things all around the world. Why? It's in the capacity of Hashem Elokeinu. So I'm acting now as your God, and I'm busy manipulating things in Persia, here, there, US, Russia, Ukraine, everything going on around Gaza, Lebanon, and of course, Eretz Yisrael. But the point is that it was in the Megillah where we were taught to see, we were trained, on the contrary, because of the fact that they compressed it all into 40 minutes, half hour, 40 minutes of reading, events of 9 years, where they're helping train us to be able to see through that coding of Derech HaTeva and to actually only see Hashem busy and in action. And this, the Alter of Kelm says that is the element of the advantage that the story of Purim had over Har Sinai. Meaning what, right? Chazal tell us that there was a certain advantage that the Kabbalah HaTorah after Purim, their sense of commitment to Hashem after the Purim days was even greater than at Har Sinai. And what does that mean? Har Sinai was the most stupendous event outside of perhaps Bria Sa'olam itself. Outside of Yesh Me'ayin. But that's exactly the point. The author of Kelm says at Har Sinai, they were exposed to supernature. They were exposed to, he says, that there was no Bechira then because they saw everything so clearly that the whole world lost its significance. But they saw how tiny and nothing earth was and anything material was based on everything they were exposed to. And it was just like, Maral says one of his explanations, when he forced them by hanging the mountain over them, it doesn't mean that there was a threat. What it means is that there was just no choice. Everything was so clear that they were just automatically drawn after it with full enthusiasm. But once that stopped, and Nisim weren't happening on a day-to-day basis, and now you are back into the system of day to day, what we're calling Olam Kemenhagei Noheg. Maybe there you don't see Hashem. Maybe there you don't see Hashem as openly, as clearly. So what happened on Purim? What happened on Purim was a total switch in their perception of Hashgacha. Really brought it to the fullest level. Why? Because again, throughout the days of Bais Rishon, Hashem's presence was open, palpable. There were open nisim going on. This was the first time where they're out of Eretz Yisrael. They don't have that system of the Beis HaMikdash with the Hashras HaShechina. They're among the Goyim. There is a they kind of de were demoted into an Olam Kiminhag reality. They're not in that special place, on a plane above the rest of reality in Eretz Yisrael at the Beis HaMikdash. Now they're subject to the ins and outs of the big world, of the whims of kings, et cetera, et cetera. And there's all kinds of things going on around them that are affecting them. And all of a sudden, here they were so shown to see with one sudden flash that no, this was also only Hashem manipulating things around them and toward them. This brought it to a new madriga. This was from seeing Hashem at Har Sinai to seeing Hashem in the ins and outs of Olam Kiminhag. And this brought their commitment to Hashem and their sense of emunah to a higher level, because now they gained the greatness of seeing Hashem in the everyday. Hashem gave them that glimpse to be able to see beyond the teva into the just apparent everyday. And the Ramban says that that's really where the very great nisim are meant to get us. This is one of the very famous Rambans. It's the Ramban truth you have to put together at the end of Bayin, at the beginning of Ba'era, where he says that part of the purpose of the Nisim HaGluyim, of the very great famous miracles, is in order to draw our attention to the Nisim HaNistarim, to the hidden miracles, which are really just, meaning Derech HaTavah, really just Hashem's way of manipulating his world. If we'll give another mashal for the idea, and imagine if you have, I'm not sure if I said this here, but imagine if you have a kid's hospital, where they have to be giving different oral medicines for all kinds of different things. The one common denominator of oral medicines is that they all taste disgusting. So what do? So they mix everything into fruit punch. Any oral medicines that they have to give the kids, they mix it into fruit punch. Okay. So someone from superficial comes to the hospital and says, "Oh, I see that this hospital's medical approach is fruit punch. They treat everything with fruit punch." Right? Well, we understand that fruit punch is just a cover for one medicine for this kid, a different medicine for this kid, a totally different medicine for this kid. Derech HaTeva is fruit punch. Is that fruit punch? Hashem is busy doing all kinds of different things with all kinds of different people. We all operate with Derech HaTeva, but none of us have the same Derech HaTeva, right? We all have a totally different life story, totally different life circumstances. Derech HaTeva is Hashem's cover for dealing with each individual in a very specific way, and certainly when it comes to his nation in general. Derech HaTeva is just his way of having a certain cover over what he's busy doing, but he wants us to be able to see through that cover. And now, with the events that are going out now, he's actually treating us to, he's making that Derech HaTeva become more and more transparent. He's making that cover become more and more transparent. And again, the challenge is, who of us, how many of us, and to what extent, and I'm trying to bang this into myself, to what extent are we going to be joining that bandwagon? Hashem is moving the world closer to him in this way. Are we going to be a part of that process? Are we going to be joining the bandwagon? And this has so many implications. This is something that, okay, we figure, okay, we all have emunah, fine. People who were distant and now they're exposed to great things and now they're gaining emunah, okay, so they're going to catch up with us. But that's not how it is. The emunah becomes more and more and more real and starts to, we have to, it's an active process. You can't just wait for it to hit you in the face. Hashem is sending us plenty of things that are hitting us in the face. Hashem is spoon feeding it to us. But then we have to take it and internalize it and let it affect us in a way that life starts feeling different. Life starts feeling different. Hashem is a real part of everything going on with me. And Memela, Hashem becomes a real part of my thinking and of my decision making. Everything is being affected by that. Things move into perspective. When we see, you look at southern Lebanon, and you look at Gaza, and you see the utter destruction that's there. Right? When you think of Nasrallah, who, again, I don't know exactly how it worked, but my general understanding was that it wasn't like he was suddenly killed in a bombing because the bomb didn't actually destroy the place where he was, because he was so deep, just that it basically caused all the chemicals to leak in and sealed off any air, and he basically suffocated to death. That's my general understanding. I don't know exactly what the particulars were, but it wasn't like he suddenly was banged on the head and killed, which presumably means that he actually understood what was happening, had a chance to digest what's happening to him. We should be thinking about that. Thinking about seeing Hashem smashing the enemies of his people, seeing how Sinwar is killed like a cheap dog, right, by soldiers who didn't even know who he was. And to appreciate Hashem, we say, Kel Nekama is Hashem. Hashem is the Lord of revenge. The Gemara says that when it comes to Hashem, for us, revenge is a bad midah. When it comes to seeing Hashem's revenge, we actually consider that a very great value. Why do we consider it a very great value? Because it's just setting things in order. On the contrary, when people are able to get away with things, we're seeing an unclear world. We're seeing a world that isn't really how it ought to be. When we suddenly come and see that, no, Hashem's enemies are going to get totally decimated. And who are Hashem's enemies? Hashem says in Parshas Zachar, your enemies are my enemies. Those are my enemies. The people who are against my people, people who are against my children, those are my enemies. And those are the ones who I'm going to come after. When you see that happening, just one moment. When you see that happening, we want it to hit home that the Hashem that we're busy with is a Kel Noira, a mighty and fearsome God. What's that? Appeared, made his appearance, which is what we're seeing now. He's busy making his appearance from behind the scenes. Now, we want to take that a sober step further, and I'm coming back to you. We want to take that a sober step further and understand that it's kind of like what we're told about Mitzrayim. It should enhance not only our emunah, but it should enhance our yira also. It should enhance our yira also. Someone said to me, why do we need to gain chizik from seeing what he did to Nasrallah? It's for people who, but again, we say the people who were never connected in the first place, why should they see anything? They saw Jews killed, they saw Arabs killed. But if we're not coming from a place of, and we've discussed this a few times, if we're not coming from a place of proving, it would be difficult to prove anything because, Rachmana Litzlan, it's been happening all over this, unless you start adding up the numbers, but I don't know how significant that is. The point is something else. No, we're coming with our, like we said before, our emuna infrastructure already in place. And we're watching, what is Hashem conveying here? And yes, through the tragedies we've experienced, we're seeing Klal Yisrael now, in the perspective of a year and a half, we're seeing the elevation of Klal Yisrael coming through this process. And we also are seeing that, yes, these are Hashem's enemies who are being smashed. And that should also make us relate more soberly. You can't just get away with anything to Hashem. Oh, Hashem, we're not in that position. None of us are affiliated with Hezbollah. But in terms of just enhancing the yira, you have to know who you're dealing with. You have to know who you're dealing with. And that should be enhancing all of our dynamics with Hashem. The yira, we're dealing with a fearsome and awesome God. But at the same time, how that enhances our Ahava and our appreciation of the fact that this fearsome and awesome God is telling us, but you're the ones I want a relationship with. You're the ones who I want to be close with. What were you going to ask?
So, the Jews weren't actually harmed, right?
Right.
Everything flipped around. And here, like you have Nasrallah, he was harming Jews for 20 years before he was taken out, or 30 years, or whatever.
The story of Purim was the most optimal way of it playing out.
Right.
But you know what? Also, in the times of Purim, the Jews had a history of the Churban Bayis Rishon, which was a massacre and a Holocaust in Eretz Yisrael. We've had those pieces in our history. We were never at a point. Purim was one of those stories where it was just totally. And that gave us that perspective. And on the contrary, we want to use that perspective to be able to see it in the situations where there are the other challenging pieces to it. And we need that school. It's true. So, bringing this all together, we're just coming back to that call, particularly as Purim is coming about. And Purim is the Yom Tov of exactly that, the Yom Tov of being of being able to see how what just looked like a collection of different events suddenly in one shot turned out to be Hashem's love for us, Hashem busy putting all kinds of things in place. And that brought us so close to him. It created a closeness, like we said before, was even to a certain, in a certain way, even greater than the closeness that was at Har Sinai. It created a commitment between us and him. That was a commitment that we've discussed here that paved the way toward the Kabbalah HaTorah that constituted the Bayis Sheni. Bayis Sheni came with, let's put that on the side for a minute right now. But this is the process Hashem is putting us now. Hashem is putting us through that process of I'm showing myself to you, I'm showing myself to you. I'm gonna keep in place a very superficial, transparent veneer of Derech HaTeva. But this is spoon feeding. This is spoon feeding. And us with the background and with the infrastructure should be trying to put ourselves at the spearhead, leading the trend of moving toward that clearer emunah, which we hope is leading up to the ultimate gilui, the ultimate revelation. We'll just round this out with one last point. We'll round this out with one last point, and that is the very great place that Tainus Esther plays in this picture. Because Tainus Esther is a little bit of a puzzle if you think about it. It's not commemorating anything sad. It's not like all the other Tanaism are very clear. What is it commemorating? It's commemorating the fact that they fasted back then. 1 minute. Seems a little much to fast for a whole day in order to commemorate a fast that anyways isn't relevant because it all turned out okay. What is the idea? But the Rambam puts it into perspective, and he said the experience in those days was that the fasting is really just representative of intense tshuva, intense tefillah, transformation, elevation resulted in whoosh. Suddenly you saw they came out of those 3 days and they saw the world upside down. They saw Haman hanging on the tree and Mordechai is dressed in royal garments and he's the owner of Haman's estate. We want to relive that every year, not just to commemorate the good times, but to commemorate how intense tshuva and tefillah creates intense transformation, brings great yeshuas, brings greater closeness to Hashem, brings greater elevation. So it's not that we're doing it just to commemorate. We're doing it to activate it again, to actually be able to go into this Purim with the same closeness and with the same yeshuas that they gained through the process they went to. The reason their Purim was so exhilarating was it wasn't just because of the fact that things worked out at the end, but it was because they experienced we're making the transformation and they suddenly saw Hashem say, if so, I'm going to take you back into my embrace. You're going to see everything fall into place. So we want to go through that in the same way. We're seeing Hashem doing all kinds of things to be able to tell ourselves if we take these indications of Hashem, we take these calls from Hashem and throw it into that much more tshuva, that much more tefillah, we'll be able to experience Hashem's Yeshuas that much more. We'll be able to experience the joy of being in Hashem's care that much more and be able to celebrate Purim that much more. And Be'ezus Hashem, we should see Hashem give us even more cause to celebrate it as a result of that blessed back and forth. Him showing himself to us, us connecting to it, us drawing close, and then being zeichet to see him show it even more and see the Yeshuas really reach their maximum, Be'ezus Hashem.
Okay.
Come to you.
Can I ask you a few questions?
Please.
Okay, one is I was thinking, Ahasuerus, even before Haman shows his face to him that night, was a tremendous rasha. The whole story is he was happy there was no Beis HaMikdash, that Hashem didn't bring us back. He was a tremendous like Haman. So when Mordechai is passing by and hearing Bigson and Teresh plotting to kill him, and nobody else understood the language, and Mordechai happened to be, I mean, not happened, obviously, but he was Sanhedrin, so he knew it. He could have just ignored it. It would have been very good, and this whole thing didn't have to happen. Ahasuerus would have been killed, and maybe we would have been able to go back to Eretz Yisrael and build our Beis HaMikdash. Why was Mordechai looking to let Ahasuerus, who couldn't stand Hashem, was very happy to say, "Oh, Hashem doesn't keep his word with the 70 years." And to me, he's no different than another paro. So why was Mordechai so into having this Ahasuerus person continue living? Then Esther could go back home and live a normal life.
Why did Mordechai go to the trouble of saving Ahasuerus?
He was a tremendous rasha. It wasn't just
Okay.
Stam a guy on the street. He was
Yeah,
happy that there was
let
no,
me
the whole
address the
story starts
question.
is that
Okay.
Vayihi, because Ahasuerus is very happy, and Vayihi is not a good
Let
child.
me address the question. Let me address the question. So I'll give you just a sharp line. The Beis HaLevi is his son Reb Chaim Brisker, the brilliant Reb Chaim Brisker, son of the brilliant Beis HaLevi. When he was a young boy, he was known for his wit. And the Beis HaLevi, his father, used to challenge him with questions. And there are some very famous answers that he gave as a very young boy. And one of the questions that the Beis HaLevi asked him was exactly this question.
Oh.
Why did Mordechai save Ahasuerus? What does he care if a lousy Persian would drop dead? And Reb Chaim Brisker's answer was, well, this way two lousy Persians dropped dead. But that's a little bit more of a
This
son said.
doesn't speak to me.
But that's a little bit more as child genius. The more serious answer to that question was that Mordechai was very prudent and he understood a number of things. He understood, first of all, that not reporting it would be dangerous.
Why? Nobody would know.
Wait,
Nobody understood
let me
his
go straight.
language. That's why they were speaking. He's the
Let me
only one. So nobody would know.
go straight. Let me go straight. That's number one. That's in general, it's important to realize that a lack of loyalty to the country that we live in is regarded from a Torah perspective as dangerous and even wrong. Meaning, again, as long as it's not conflicting with our principles.
But
And
that was, he was saying, go back to Hamas Avodah Zarah.
Please
Well,
let
the
me go
Russia.
straight. Let me go straight, please. Yes, Ahasuerus was a Rasha. Ahasuerus was a Rasha, and yet Mordechai understood that, first of all, you never know. When one Rasha goes, who's going to take his place? Nobody were great lovers of Jews. But the point is that Mordechai also understood another thing, and that is that by contributing and showing loyalty, the Jews only stand to gain by that. Mordechai was not in position to be setting up who's going to be the king of the Persian Empire, but he was working with good Jewish sense. And good Jewish sense was, it's always a good idea to be demonstrating loyalty to the country that you live in and to be working toward Shloim HaMalchus, because that's in everybody's interest. And at the end of the day, the Jewish people will only gain from it. Now, what was the basis for his thinking that? We see that that's how it played out. He also understood that if Hashem is precisely putting him into position to be able to hear that conversation, there was a message from Hashem here. Hashem is telling him, I'm giving you an opportunity, I'm giving you an in here to actually gain significant favor with the king. And as we see, that is exactly how Ataka played out. So Mordechai's thinking proved itself very well.
I'm on a Navi also.
Mordechai was a Navi. I don't know if he was operating here with Nevuah.
You don't have Nevuah outside of Eretz Yisrael.
What's that? That's
You don't have
true.
Nevuah outside, and not in a place of Avodah Zarah, which is why
That's
Esther
also true.
has
There is Nevuah
Keli.
outside of Eretz Yisrael, but he was operating with Ruach HaKodesh, which people sometimes misunderstand. Ruach HaKodesh does not necessarily mean having a vision of what is going to happen, but Ruach HaKodesh means a very, very fine sense of what Hashem's attitude would be in this case. Ruach HaKodesh is often simply the result of having imbibed a lot of Torah and understanding what the Torah's way of thinking is. And that's presumably what he was operating with here. It was with a very good, prudent sense of what would the Torah's attitude here be? What would the Torah thinking be in such a case?
You're only allowed
Good.
to be with the country you live in if it's not against the Torah. Ahasuerus was saying, "Bow to an avodah zarah." No, I don't have to listen to such a king.
Achashverosh,
That's what Ahasuerus
we wouldn't
was.
listen to his decree to bow down. He didn't
Walking
say
around to
that.
avodah zarah. He said everybody has to. He was going along with everybody should bow to Haman's avodah zarah.
That
He
was
gave
later.
all the power over to Haman.
That was later. That was later.
Right, but I'm saying is, had he been dead, all this wouldn't have happened.
Okay. That was later.
But exactly, it was later because he was allowed to live. Who
Okay, I'm
says
going to
Haman
have
never would
to.
have been risen to power?
Achashverosh did not make decrees directly against the Torah. Later, Haman had his own personal thing, but that wasn't it wasn't even necessarily Avodah
He
Zarah.
also
He
didn't
didn't
want
make
the
any
Jews to go
halacha
back to Eretz Yisrael. I think
in
that's why we still have a Tanis Esther. Even in the Torah, the Megillah begins and ends with,
No, we'll leave
"Get
some
out
of
of
the
the base of
questions
Mikdash.
open. We'll
Get
leave
out of
some of
the
the
base of
questions
Mikdash," is what
open.
Ahasuerus is saying.
Okay,
The
well.
beginning and at the end, he says it, Esther.
Okay.
At Chatzi HaMalchut.